Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
Ministers have agreed to reduce the time Ukrainians can stay in state accommodation from 90 days down to 30 days following an increase in arrivals from that country. A cabinet subcommittee also agreed to work towards a contribution model, which we discussed on yesterday's programme, whereby international protection applicants who are working would have to pay towards their accommodation. It comes as 52 Georgians were removed from the state on a deportation flight last night. We're joined on the line now by Colin Brophy, Minister of State for Migration, and by Craig Hughes, a political editor with the Irish Daily Mail, who's with me in studio. Good morning to you both. Colin Brophy, first of all, where are we with regard to the rules for Ukrainians? Is that now a definitive decision?
Yes, what we're going to do is we're going to go from 90 days to 30 days. We're taking this because we want to be able to provide an accommodation when people arrive. And obviously, with the increase in numbers that we've had, we think it's appropriate so as that we can continue to provide that 30-day period to reduce the offer, which was a 90-day period, down to 30 days.
Now, they then have to find their own accommodation within effectively a month.
Yes. So, and I mean, it is important to note there is a established Ukrainian community here in Ireland. Some people who are actually arriving at the moment directly find their own accommodation on arrival, obviously through people they know who are living here already. So I believe it's perfectly possible for someone arriving in to be able to make that arrangement for themselves within 30 days. That's pretty much, by the way, in line with what other European countries do, some of whom don't even provide any accommodation for Ukrainian people when they're arriving.
Now, in theory, any of the young men will be liable to be sent to the front, so there should not be too many young men in their 20s, early 30s, whatever, arriving here. So it's likely it could be mostly women and children. Is that the case?
No, it'll be a combination, because there was some changes in terms of internal legislation in Ukraine, which President Zelensky's government brought in a number of weeks ago, which has allowed a little bit more freedom of movement for younger males to travel and to leave Ukraine. So I think it'll be and continue to be a mixture of both males 18 to 20 something and a range, as we have had for the last number of years, of mostly women and maybe children coming as well.
So you actually think that people who come here without maybe a word of English or a smattering that they may have learned at school or picked up along the way, that these people within 30 days can sort themselves? That's the belief of the government.
What we're actually seeing is that for some of them arriving in, they're sorting themselves straight away, because there is
some.
Now
you say some. What about those who can't?
Well, that's what the 30 days is there to help people to get set up. And as I say, it's right online with what has been done right across Europe in terms of receiving Ukrainians in. And there is a range of supports, and everybody from government to community groups and the Ukrainian community themselves working together to make sure when people arrive that they're helped, they're assisted, and they're given an opportunity. And that particular status which Ukrainian people have, that protected status which they have, is very beneficial in terms of enabling them to come, enabling them to work.
Okay, so you make them welcome, and then what do you do? Do you actually turf them out on the day 31? I mean, what actually happens in theory? So a family arrive, maybe a mother, a grandmother and a couple of kids, and you welcome them in, as is our obligation, and they're free to work, but maybe they're not of working age or working ability. So 30 days comes, day 31, what actually happens?
Well, what we're finding is that because this was happening obviously at the end of 90 days, is that people will, and I fully believe will also at 30 days, will be able to find their own accommodation through their community networks and through the groups that are there, and they will be able to go out and have the benefits of being able to work in Ireland and to continue to receive the welcome which Ireland
now,
has been.
What do you say to Irish people listening in who say, listen, I work, I have a job, and I can't find accommodation?
Well, I think, look, it's important to recognise we all recognise the strains that there are on accommodation. We all recognise that, but we also have to be willing, as we have shown, and I think the Irish people have shown, that they're very welcoming in terms of acknowledging that Ukrainian people are fleeing a war situation. They're coming to Europe, they're coming to Ireland, they're coming to a range of countries, and they're being given that designated protection status that enables them to come, that enables them to work, that enables them to build a life, while hopefully we move towards a situation where the war will end in Ukraine and Ukrainian people will have the option and right to return and help rebuild their country.
Craig Hughes, you're raising an eyebrow, or both.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning, Minister Brophy. Look, I think what's clear is, and what the government won't say out loud, is that this is part of a move to make Ireland less attractive, because that is the only way they feel they can reduce the numbers. And we'll look at Ukraine first of all. So I reported last month, after obtaining a confidential memo to Cabinet on this, that the changes in Ukraine were that, so conscription only applies if you're 25 to 60, right? But if you were 18 to 24, you couldn't leave the country. That changed at the end of August. And what we saw in September was then a wave of 18 to 22-year-olds coming here. We saw the daily rate increase from 59 to 28. And in the month of September, there was 1,871 new arrivals from Ukraine. That was the highest monthly figure this year and more than double last year's monthly average.
Now, do we know how many of those are actually putting themselves at the mercy of the state for accommodation? Or, given that they're young, they're mobile, they are of working age, and we are short of workers in this country.
Well, what the officials in the memo were saying was that they were unclear about whether these new arrivals were coming here simply to visit people that they knew who were here, you know, if they were just getting out for a bit of freedom after being trapped in Ukraine for a while, and whether they would go back or not. That was unclear. But I think certainly what this measure will do will say, OK, look, if you're coming here, there's not going to be permanent accommodation for you, I think, unless they have somewhere where they can stay already. And Minister Brophy mentioned the...
Is that not a reasonable position, even though it may amount to deterrence, because there have been allegations that we were just a little bit too generous here? Maybe that's not a fault, but it's a fact maybe rather than a fault. And people were coming here. So this is a bit of deterrence the government is throwing in, saying, if you want to come, you work and you look after yourself.
Yeah, I think that'll probably play out in the next month. But what is a real pressing issue for the government was, you know, this running out of accommodation. They had to repurpose a reception centre in Kildare that had been previously tooled down. So they were really stretched to provide these accommodation settings. And now we know at the end of this month, it will run out.
We've had the Taoiseach talking about, we can't cope with the numbers. Yeah.
Exactly. And this pivot and the measures for asylum seekers, which have been kicked to touch slightly, again, are all part of this deterrent mechanisms to make Ireland a bit more less welcoming, because they can't cope with the numbers.
Would you accept that, Minister? That is behind all of this. It's just a fact of life for government. The affordability of all of this, the availability of accommodation simply isn't there. So you've got to do something to staunch the flow. And this is part of it.
Well, what government is doing, and I mean, that's a very valid point that you're making there, Pat, in terms of, we are conscious of the amount of money that it's taxpayers' money that has been spent. We want to bring down the overall costs, both in the area of international protection, and we have been significantly bringing down the costs in terms of providing service, the accommodation side, to Ukrainians arriving in. What we're doing, I think, is aligning ourselves in a more equal way with what's available by other EU member states. Because I think overall, the scenario that we will be looking at is maybe within the next 12 months is on a European level, the European Commission, in conjunction with the member states, will have to decide how it's going to handle the issue of people who have this protected status in the long term. And we're going to have to, I believe, decide that equally across Europe, and put in place the necessary, looking forward, the necessary processes to allow people, particularly to help and support people who want to return to Ukraine once the war is over and help with the rebuilding of their country.
Craig?
Yeah, I think that's a major challenge coming down the tracks for government. The Temporary Protection Order, which grants Ukrainians temporary protection here, ends in March 2027. What happens then? You know, we have, I think, 23,000 in state accommodation here at the moment, Ukrainians. Do they simply go into the asylum seeker process as Sinn Féin wants. I don't think that's going to be a runner. Do they automatically get to remain? If they do, what happens to the entitlement? So all this has to be teased out.
So 23,000 are in temporary accommodation at the moment and they can stay there for 90 days.
No, so 21,000 are in accommodation that came in before the 90-day rule. So you have a kind of 2,000 who are in that.
So a minister, that business, 21,000, who, according to you, in 30 days could sort themselves out, have not chosen to do so, and is 3 years into the war, plus.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yeah, well, I think there's a situation in the original offer. Sorry, did you want me to...
I was just going to clarify that. If it's so easy to get sorted in Ireland in 30 days, why have so many people not chosen to so do?
Well, I think that is a situation which we will have to look at again. I think that the open-ended commitment to accommodation is something in the longer run that we will have to look at. What we have done is we made an initial change where we ended the ongoing open-ended provision of accommodation. We changed that to 90 days. We've now changed that to 30 days. But I do think in a longer looking process, we would also have to look at whether or not you can continue to have this ongoing provision, particularly as we reach a point where we're going to have a change on a European level. I mean, it's important, by the way, to recognise this is not something happening individually within Ireland. This is something that affects, indeed, affects other European countries far more greatly than it actually affects Ireland.
Yes, I think the government is kind of hamstrung a bit at the moment because the war still hasn't ended. You have to be very conscious of that. So whether the temporary protection order gets extended or not, I can't imagine that it doesn't if the war is still ongoing, but we hope...
Now Minister, the question of the people paying for their digs, which is a proposal that went to a cabinet subcommittee, it seems to have hit the rocks. Why?
No, it hasn't actually hit the rocks at all. We had the improvement in principle at the Cabinet Subcommittee of the proposal. That is now going to be worked up into the operational model. And I'm expecting that that will actually go back to the party leaders in a very short number of weeks.
Is it true that you've got a legal advice saying that you can't evict people anyway? If they don't pay their rent, you can't evict them. Is that right?
There's a difference. It's very important to understand what is being proposed. What is being proposed is a system which I believe and which I support, which is all about fairness and equity, which is the situation that if someone is legally, as they are after 6 months, entitled to work and they're going through the IPAS process, that they should make a contribution towards their costs. If they are working in a shop or they're working in a factory or they're working in a tech business alongside somebody else, that person's paying for their accommodation. It's only fair that that person should make a contribution.
Okay, but now, is it true that your legal advice says that if people don't cough up, that you can't throw them out?
So what we're not trying to do is get to a point of saying, you know, that we're going to be wanting to evict people.
But the question was about your legal advice. Is your legal advice that you cannot evict people who don't pay?
What we are going to be doing is not looking to evict people, but what we are going to be saying is that there will be a consequence and we will have a process for collecting that money and that there will be consequences for not paying that. And that is important. I don't want to ever have a situation where I think we're depriving people of the accommodation which they're entitled to legally.
One of the consequences you talk about is denying people the opportunity to get citizenship. Is that a truth?
Well, absolutely. It's something that I believe if you are in a situation where you're not willing to make a contribution towards your accommodation while going through a process which will determine whether or not you have a legal right to remain in Ireland, then that at a certain point in time, there should be a consequence for you in relation to if you were applying for citizenship later on, how long you would have to wait for that. There are rights and responsibilities attached to all of this, and I don't think it's unreasonable to say to someone, if you weren't willing to make that contribution at that point in time, then you should have a much longer, more difficult process in terms of acquiring our citizenship.
In other words, you're saying if you're not responsible enough to pay your bills, you don't deserve to be an Irish citizen.
Well, you phrased it that way. You phrased it that way, Pat. I think it's important to say to people what's fair and equitable and say to them, look, you're going through a process. We recognise that you're entitled to your accommodation. We'd ask you just to be fair and contribute. Because remember, we are actually talking about people who are working,
yeah.
who are earning money in the same way that you or I are earning and paying.
Craig?
They're paying their taxes already.
Yeah.
Why not ask them to make a contribution towards their costs?
It goes back to that initial point they made, Pat, about making Ireland less attractive. I mean, we're talking here about someone who could be earning between 97 and 150 euro a week to start paying, you know, 15 euro towards their accommodation. I know 15 euro might seem small, but when you have very little, that is a lot. And it goes back to the only way the government feels they can control uncontrolled migration is to make Ireland appeal less desirable. And when the system is cracking at the seams, despite having millions of euro thrown into it, despite doubling the amount of people in the International Protection Office, they can't seem to get ahead of it.
Okay, Craig.
Can I, sorry, briefly, Colin.
I can't let that go
because it's very inaccurate. We've actually made tremendous improvements in the system. We are actually now processing more cases than are actually presenting. We've seen the numbers fall who are applying for international protection. We have increased the staff both at the initial process stage,
we're
processing far more, and we have increased the staff in the appeal process stage.
What's the average processing time?
So the system is actually working. We're down to, we have a processing time for the approved and the expedited countries, the safe countries, which we're taking that processing time absolutely down to towards the 12-week period we want to.
Yes, but the average is 13 months still overall,
and
isn't it?
The average still, and that's why we are bringing what people refer to as the European Migration Pact, which is the international protection legislation, through the Oireachtas, which will see us reach a 12-week target. And that's why it's so important that legislation gets passed and implemented for next June.
And do you think, Minister Brophy, that you'll be in favour of processing people in third countries outside of the jurisdiction?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to look and see what the proposals are coming from Europe. We have to have an open mind as to, we want to make sure that anything we opt into, and we've made no decision on this at all, by the way, but anything that we would opt into would be absolutely fair and would be compliant with all international law.
All right. I want to move on to other matters. Craig, the Ivan Yates story, which is still going on there, I mean, is that anything more than kind of a media curiosity, or is there something more fundamental going on?
Well, I think broadly for the media and broadcasters, there will be questions about, I mean, we reported in the Irish Mail on Sunday, for example, in 2022, that Ivan was working for Fianna Fáil and coaching members of their parliamentary party. And so, I mean, the question is then, what sort of decontamination period should there be before you could then go and appear on broadcast again in the next election, in the next presidential election, which I think that'll ultimately come down to Commissioner Naman. In terms of where it goes from here now, I will say there is quite a lot of unrest within the rebels in Fianna Fáil on this. Their view is that, look, he was being paid by the party. He coached the Taoiseach and other senior ministers.
I was just thinking about that. I mean, what could Ivan Yates ever have to teach Micheál Martin about politics?
Yeah, well, look, this
is a curiosity for me.
The case stands there, but I think there is, I guess, a reasonable question now. Was his opinions on those who opposed Micheál Martin, were they coloured by the fact that he was being paid by them? And I think whether true or not, it leaves that question open. And I think you will probably see movement here from Commissioner Naman and providing new guidance on what is acceptable and what isn't.
Yeah, Colin?
Yeah, I actually would agree. I think that's a very valid point that I think the Commission will look to provide guidelines. I think for me, the key thing is disclosure, really. It's not that somebody can't do something and they can't at the same time appear on radio. But I think it's very important. And you see this on other international media where you'll see either underneath someone or at the start of a radio section, they'll say this person has an involvement in X or this person has an involvement in Y. And it enables you as the listener to make your own judgment as you're hearing their contribution. So I think for me, it really comes down to that key point that if somebody is doing work with a political party or with a individual minister, that before they would either be broadcasting on a station or even as a contributor to a panel discussion, that would be made clear to people who were listening. Mm.
A final brief point. Ishgairn will not be building maybe some of the treatment plants. Private companies will be doing that, and then Ishgairn will come in and run them. Why? Colm?
Well, I mean, look, I think everybody in government is looking at every way in which we can break the logjam around providing more and more houses. That's what we want to do. If there's a way of effectively enabling a private sector contractor to build something to the standard that the state wants and have the state then manage it and run it after it's built.
Yeah, they still have the same planning obstacles that the state would have.
If that speeds up the delivery of houses, then that's something we should be
working. Last words from you, Craig, on that.
Yeah, look, I think it is a positive measure. We're going to have Minister of Housing James Brown's new housing plan in the next 2 or 3 weeks. They really still need to throw the kitchen sink at things, because if you look at the housing projections for the next 3 years, they're not going to be anywhere close to where they said they would be come the time of the next election.
Craig Hughes, political editor of the Irish Daily Mail. Colin Brophy, TD, Minister of State for Migration. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.